Let's start. Okay. Let's go back. Does anybody remember where we left off last week? I think I had promised. I think we'd started to look at the tribe issue, Shevet yeah. Dan.
Right.
Shevet Dan.
You said the review was on Yahushua also, remember?
Right. Right. So did we go through the sequence in Shmuel in Shoftim Perek Aleph in the different tribes?
I think we did.
Or did we kind of rush through it at the very end?
I just remember you said that Dan was all coastal, not mountain territory.
Right. And we talk about the progression in Perek Aleph that lists all the tribes and the sequence of where they conquered. We went through that.
Yeah, we did that.
Okay.
So I gave somebody
a copy of this map. There are extra copies here if anybody wants.
I'm not here, but I can't.
If you need extra copies, yeah, the colored map, the one that's an exact duplicate of this one. Anybody still needs that? That's just good to keep in a plastic sheet and keep with you because. They're important for us. I mean, it's really Sefer Shoftim, Yeshua and Shoftim in one visual. Map. It's a remarkable achievement. But what you get in this map visually is essentially what we discussed at the end of the shiur last week, which was the sense that those tribes that are located in the mountains have much larger territorial expanse than those tribes that are located in areas where either on the coast. Or where the Canaanites with sort of the isolated regions. So, for example, if you go through the list of Shvatim as they appear in Perek Aleph of Shoftim, which is on that chart, table that I gave you. Did I not?
Do you have that?
From last week? What happens in Perek Aleph of Shoftim which is a summary of Sefer Yehoshua, but it's a summary that goes through not only the conclusion of the book, which was that the Shvatim conquered large areas, but not completely. It was sort of how the whole story of Sefer Shoftim began, but also goes through it in sequence. So if you start at the bottom. At the start of the top of the chart with Shevet Yehuda, and you go through them in sequence: Yehuda, Benjamin, Menashe, Ephraim, Zvulun, Asher, Naphtali. What you find is that the amount of land, the amount of territory that is assigned to each tribe, or that each tribe is successful in reaching, diminishes in sequence. So we start with Shevet Yehuda, who for the most part is able to conquer the entire region associated with them. Then we go to Shevet Binyamin. And Binyamin is described as having conquered all the cities of Binyamin with the exception of the area around Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim remains this kind of Canaanite enclave. Vayeshiva Yevusi et Bnei Binyamin b'Yerushalayim. And then we get into the areas of Menashe and Ephraim, and there you have larger areas. The Canaanites remained in the land. You have by Ephraim. Similarly, so you have enclaves of Canaanites inside the general Israelite territory, followed by the tribes of Zvulun, Asher, and Naphtali. Zvulun, Asher, and Naphtali, if you look at the map, you'll see the picture looks orange inside yellow instead of yellow inside orange. Right? The yellow is the Canaanite area. The orange is the Israelite area where they were able to settle. And what you get when you describe the territories of Zvulun, Asher, and Naphtali, is that the text describes the almost a reversal of roles. By Asher it says, "Vayeshev ha'asheri bekerav ha'kna'ani yoshev ha'aretz." It's is the same map I gave, same chart I gave out last week. Vayeshev haKna'ani haAsheri bekerav haKna'ani.
I'm glad we left him with you.
What?
I'm glad we left him with you.
Yes. I just make more. The Asher, in the case of Asher, it was Asher who, at the end of the conclusion, after all the areas that they did conquer and didn't conquer, the conclusion is that Asher dwelt inside or amidst the Canaanites. In other words, the picture is reversed.
Where is Asher?
Oh, so that's why I said that if you that the list actually, in sequence of the perek, starts from the bottom and just goes straight up. Yehuda, Binyamin, Ephraim, Menashe, Zvulun, Asher and Naphtali. It just literally goes straight up the line. Yeah. And Asher and Naphtali, the tribal territory of Asher and Naphtali is today known as the country of Lebanon.
We were just talking about
right.
that.
Yeah, no, I don't believe...
If we had our borders, we would go up to the Litani River.
Right. That is correct.
Well, now Syria is taking over Lebanon, so you won't be doing that.
So now you can get actual. So if you can. Back to recording.
So all that land is considered holy land.
Well, certainly the area of Asher and Naphtali is.
Right.
Right. That was the original tribal territory of Asher.
I'm just saying the concept, the idea is there's some pasuk in the Torah that says wherever you will walk will be.
Correct. Beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. But, so you have the same, going back to the story of Asher and Naphtali, and similarly by Naphtali you have almost the same phraseology. Naphtali dwelt amongst the Canaanites rather than the Canaanite city here or there amidst Bnei Israel. And there it adds the phrase, that the Canaanites were the Yoshve Haaretz. We were kind of the We were the exception. We were the minority. So the list is diminishes in sequence, diminishes progressively in terms of what each Shevet was able to achieve in terms of the conquest of their region, all the way up to, from Yehuda, all the way up north straight to Naphtali. Not every Shevet is mentioned. In this chart, I left out Shimon, even though Shimon's mentioned, because Shimon is given... You remember a handful of cities inside Shevet Yehuda. It doesn't have its own tribal region. And the tribes east of the Arden are also mentioned in Perek Aleph, but I didn't include them in this list. So this list, basically, I wanted you to see the progression from Yehuda up north.
So the Negev was not considered?
The Negev, the furthest south we got was... it depends on what time of what time of Israel, right? What time of history. And at this point in time, that's about as far as we got. Anything south of Har Chavron or Har Yehuda, at that point in time, was not.
What about David? Was he
David's there? King? When we get to David, Bezrat Hashem, sometime this year, we're going to change maps, and we'll see a much larger. By Shmuel already, you'll see a much larger map. By Shmuel and Shaul, you'll see a much larger map. Be that as it may, then we get to Dan. And by Dan, which is the subject that we're addressing, by Dan, what the Navi says, now this is back in Perek Aleph, so this story of Shevet Dan has been with us since Sefer Yehoshua. It's mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua in the actual events related to the conquest of each Shevet. I showed you the Pesukim last week. And it's mentioned again for a second time in the review of Sefer Yehoshua, which is that first perek where these sources are taken from. And there it says, "Va'ilchatzu ha'emori et bnei Dan ha'hara." The Amorites or Canaanites pushed Dan into the mountains. Kilon etanol eret la'imek. They never let them get a foothold in the valley. Va'yoel ha'emori leshevet bahar cheres ba'yalom b'shalabim. Amori continued to dwell in all of those cities which were assigned to Shevet Dan. Yad Bet Yosef Veyulamas. Amori Vamala. So here suddenly the Gvul is not the Gvul of Shevet Dan or the Gvul of Shevet Naphtali or Rasha. The Gvul is the Gvul of Shevet or the Gvul of the people of
Amori.
Amori. the whole atmosphere in Shevetan changes dramatically, with the understanding that that's the backdrop to the second half of our story, where Shevetan, at this point in time, is trying to figure out what to do with themselves. They don't know what to do. They're in their small little tribe sitting in the cities of Tzara and Eshta'ol, but essentially that's an area that they're living amidst the Plishtim and amidst the Canaanim and the Amorim. At this point in time, Amorites much later in time, Plishtim, but essentially the same issue. And so they find themselves looking for an alternative location. And that's how our story picks up. The question that I asked last week was, if the going from Shevet to Dan, which is the area of today Tel Aviv and south of it, what we call today in the modern Hebrew Gush Dan, if they're going from Gush Dan or from the Tel Aviv area and they're looking for a region that's less Canaanite, Amorite settled, where they can settle for themselves, why go all the way up north to the Golan Heights? Between Shevet Dan and the mountain region of the country, there's nowhere in between that they could settle. There's all of these other places that it lists in the beginning of the Perek that were not settled, that were not conquered. Yushalayim, and in say Shevet Menashe, Vayola Knani LeShevet, Lohar Ish Menashe Beit Shan, and you have Shevet Ephraim in the city of Gezer, and you have in Zvulun, you have a whole area of Yoshev Kitron, Yoshev Mahalol.
But those were their territories. You can't just go into one of your.
And where was Shevets. And where was Shev? And where was the Bashan?
It looks like it wasn't anybody's.
Mm. No.
They went into somebody else's territory.
Well, it doesn't say that it wasn't anybody else's territory, but it's essentially the Bashan. The whole area of the Bashan is part of Shevet Menashe. Chavot Ya'ir is all the way up to Shevet. It's not listed on the map because they didn't settle there, but goes all the way up. Shevet Menashe goes all the way up into the Golan.
Maybe they like mountain views.
Maybe they like mountain views. Very beautiful area up there. That's true. But there are beautiful areas in mountains in the Galil and the mountains in the Shomron. So, at least from the way it seems or the way it reads, when they start their journey, when these five spies start to go out, there's nothing in the text that indicates to me that they knew where they were going or that they had a specific location in mind. On the other hand, right, they go lachpor at the aretz, they look for fertile land, they're looking for certain security characteristics, this place that would be easy to conquer. There are certain, they're not necessarily biased, or it doesn't seem that they're biased to a particular location. On the other hand, when you look at their journey, starting Perek Yudchet Pasuk Bet, Vayishlachu b'nei Dan mimishpachtam חמישה אנשים מקצותם, אנשים בני חי על מצרים, מאש תאול, לרגל את הארץ ולחוקרה. To spy out the land, to seek it, to investigate it. לכו חיקרו את הארץ, go investigate the land. ויבוא הר אפרים. And they go up to הר אפרים. הר אפרים means that they're headed, they go into the mountains, and then they head north. And they ask the Kohen, are they going to be Matzliach? He says, yes. From there they go, so they have the bracha of the Kohen that they're going to be successful. And from there they go to Laish. And Laish is in the middle of the Golan. Laish is the foot of Har Bashan, or Har Chamor. So, the question that I wanted to raise is, were they going to a particular location? Or were they simply journeying through the land until they found a place that was unsettled, easy to conquer, and didn't have any other territorial claim to it? That's the question. Did they have a specific location in mind?
I think they did.
You think they did because?
It just seems too weird that they showed up in one small spot, and it's so far away.
They were directed.
They somehow
knew.
Were looking for
this spot. Right. I would agree. I think it sounds, it reads as if they have at least a general area in mind, if not a specific city. They certainly have a general region that they're headed north, and the question is why. So for the answer to that question, we have to go back to Chumash, which is not an uncommon thing for us to do. We have to go back to Chumash, and we have to go back to those places where the tribes are told which region of the country they would settle in. Remember that the division of the land of Israel by tribes is set out in Chumash already, not by just by the Goral, but is actually set out in a planned map put in place originally by Yaakov Avinu. That was his legacy to his children. That was his bracha to his children. He's essentially assigned each tribe an area of the land of Israel. And when you go back to the bracha of Yaakov, the indications are that Yaakov put Shevet Dan on the coast. And that's why Shevet Dan is given that area of all of those cities, Sarai and Eshta'ol and Ekron and all the cities on the coast. The remez or the hint to that is the way in which Yaakov understood the complexity and the difficulty it would mean by putting Shevet Dan on the coast, what that would mean for Shevet Dan. Probably the hardest territory for any of his children to take and to conquer would be that which was assigned to Shevet Dan. To go back to the bracha that Yaakov gives his children, which is in Parashat Vayechi. Correct.
16, I think, is
done. Correct. Perek Mem Tet, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Anybody have a page? 49:16. Breishit Mem Tet Tezayin, 49:16. So there, the pasuk says.
In this one, it's
60. Page 60 in the Koran. Okay. Dan Yadin Amo Keachad Shivtei Yisrael. By the way, before I do this, have we discussed these? We have discussed these brachot and how these brachot relate to the division of the land of Israel.
Long time ago, right?
All right, good to review.
Yeah.
Good to review. So let's go back to the beginning of the parak, and we'll just do an overview quickly. We're not going to do it all because I really want to take a look at Dan. But just as an overview. Vayikra Yaakov abanav vayomer, from the beginning of the parak. Vayikra Yaakov abanav vayomer, he'asu vagid alachem et asher yikra etchem acharit hayamim. Famous pasuk, Yaakov calls his children, he says, I'll tell you what will be, v'acharit hayamim. Acharit hayamim, Chazal understood it in the sense that the Nevi'im used the phrase, which is some sort of a picture of a messianic future end of time, or future time. Even so far as to suggest that Yaakov had a vision of when Mashiach would come, but it was taken away from him. But on a simpler level, the word acharit hayamim can also mean in the future, some future. It doesn't have to be the end of time. It can be just future days, future time. Hikavtzu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov v'shimu el Yisrael avichem. What does he tell his children? And now he starts one by one. Reuven b'chori ata kochi v'roshitoni yeter se'ed v'yeter az pachas kamayim al totar ki alita mishka v'avicha az chilalti yitzui ala. Reuven, my firstborn, first of my strength. You are my firstborn, which means what?
Bachor.
Right? And what's the rule of a Bachor?
He inherits everything.
He inherits not everything. Not everything.
The land?
Not everything. What does a Bachor get that everybody else doesn't get?
A double portion.
A double portion. It's twice the portion of everybody else. However, in Reuven's case, he lost that right to the double portion because of the episode with Bilhah. You violated the couch of your father. And therefore, in so doing, the notion of the Bechor, the double portion, was taken away from you. And that actually is explicit in the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, that the Bechorah, the double portion that was assigned to Reuven, was taken from him and given to Yosef because of the events related to Reuven and Bilhah. So it was taken away from the firstborn of Yaakov with Leah and given to the firstborn of Yaakov with Rachel. Those are your options. Usually the firstborn goes by the father, right? In this case, usually the firstborn goes to through the father. In the case of the double portion, it simply shifted from the firstborn of Rachel of Leah to the firstborn of Rachel. There are other components that are related to Yehuda we'll come to in a moment. That's tribe number one. So you see already that the focus of Yaakov's attention is on
Rachel.
No, the focus of Yaakov's attention is, if he's talking about the double portion versus getting the double portion or not getting the double portion, then his focus seems to be on
their behavior,
their land.
The land.
Oh.
He's what's Yaakov doing? We talk about Yaakov's brachas, but what's really a bracha? Yaakov's on his deathbed and he's giving up brachas. What's he doing? When a person is dying, what do they do?
Inheritance.
They write their last will and testament. They give it. They give their inheritance. Correct. Now, what does Yaakov have to bequeath to his children?
The land.
That's what Yaakov was promised. That's what he was given. That's what he bequeaths to his children. The land. So he takes the land of Israel and he divides it up.
He didn't have all this land.
No, it's future. It's acharit hayamim. It's where they will go. So it's a mandate. So it's a somewhere of a cross section between a will. Right. Well, I'll tell you what it's more aligned with. It's somewhere in between a will and an ethical will.
What's the future?
What's an ethical will?
Something you want to give your children.
There's a whole genre of ethical will. If you ever looked at the story of an ethical will, it's a fascinating story. Yeah, an ethical will is a fascinating story. An ethical will essentially is a message you want, not a tangible object that you leave your children, but a message, a concept, a value system that you articulate for them. So Yaakov essentially takes his land of Israel, divides it up, and he says, this is my ethical will to my children. This is what I'm telling you, you will need to do in the land of Israel. And so he starts to divide it up. Reuven, you should have been the one to get the double portion, but go back to the story of Bilhah, etc. Learn from your mistakes, but you'll get a portion, but you won't get the double portion. Then he turns to Shimon and Levi. And he does exactly the same thing. What's the most significant event in the story of Shimon and Levi's life in Yaakov's lifetime?
Shem.
The conquest of Shechem. Shimon v'Levi achim klei chamas mechoret tehem. The utensils of violence are your weapons. Besodam al tavon nafshi b'kelam al techad kvodi. I don't want to be mentioned in the context of their gathering. I will scatter them, I will separate them in Israel. So he scatters them. So what happens? Reuven, conceptually, if you think about it, what happened to Shimon and Levi?
They each get cities.
Neither of them get a contiguous portion of land. They get scattered and spread out. Now, for different reasons. Levi, historically, is able to redeem himself in the aftermath of Chet Ego. So they are given cities in fulfillment of Yaakov's Nevuah, but for a positive reason, to be spread out throughout the land so that they can be a positive influence. Whereas Shimon, who never learns from that mistake, right, Shimon repeats it in the story of Baal Peor at the end of Parshat Balak. And therefore, in the aftermath of that plague, he's decimated, and Moshe gives him a handful of cities scattered throughout the land of Israel, or throughout Shevet Yehuda. So in both cases, Yaakov's Nevuah is fulfilled, although for different reasons. Then we get to Yehuda. Yehuda, mixed into the story of Yehuda, is the whole episode with Yosef, both his accountability and his ability to redeem himself and do tshuva, demonstrating a kind of leadership that was necessary for Israel. So Yehuda, tayoduch achecha, you acknowledge your brothers, yadcha ba'orf oivecha, your hand will be against your enemies. Your brethren shall bow to you. There's a notion of element of malchus, of leadership that is assigned to Yaakov, to Yehuda. But then he says to him, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, osri la gefen iro v'lasreka b'ni atono, kibes b'yayin levusho, u'bedam anavim suto. talks about how he will have live in a place where there will be so it will be so plentiful in vines and in grapes that he will be able to use the vines to tie the animal, the donkey, and he will be able to wash his clothes in wine, because the wine will be and the juice from the grape will be so plenty. Okay, beautiful.
And his eyes will be red. He's going to be an alcoholic.
No, I don't think it's a function of alcoholism. I think it's a function of fertility of the land. What region of the country is most known for its ability to grow grapevine? Golan is newer. Golan is modern. Historically, what region of the country cultivated grapes?
No. Around here, Judah.
All the mountains of Har Yehuda and Har Hebron. You drive through the Gush, and you see all the terracing along the mountain line. Historically, not only in the time of modern Israel, but historically through all the Middle Ages, the times of the settlement from the Ottoman Empire on, that region was always known as the region of grapes, because that's what could grow on those mountains. Nothing else could grow on those mountains. They would terrace the mountains and they would grow vines. Mm-hmm. So essentially what he does is he assigns to Shevet Yehudah the territorial area south of Yerushalayim, which is ultimately the area of grapes. Then he goes on, Pasuk Gimel, Zvulun. Where do we put Zvulun? Zvulun, Lechof Yamim Mishkon. Zvulun will be on the coast, in the area of ships. V'yarkato al Tzidon. From the coast all the way up to Tzidon, meaning that the edge of Zvulun will reach through the coast up to Yarkate, is the edge or the shoulder, if you will. Sidon is Sidon, which is a little bit south of Tyre. And what you have... Or north of Tyre? Is Sidon north? It could be north. Essentially, Zvulun is placed in the just north of the... north of the Jezreel Valley, Emek Yisrael. In this map, it's a little hard to see because it looks like Zvulun is in the valley, but it's not actually. Yisachar is north, is south of the is in the valley, and Zvulun is north of the valley, along the coast, south of Asher, and the coastal area of Zvulun. But again, the coastal areas are hard for them. So, in fact, what he ends up taking is the mountain area north of Emek Yisrael, but the territory region given to him as Zvulun is along the coast. Yisachar
is not mentioned over here for some reason.
I just left him. He may have been on. Yisrael Chamor Garim. Yisachar is a crouching donkey. Vavetz ben ha-mishpataim, crouching between the sheepfolds. V'yar menucha kitov et ha-aretz kina'ema. You'll see the land that is good and pleasant. V'yet shichmo lisbol, who will take his shoulder, turn his shoulder to suffer and to take the burden. Vahilamas oved. What are we talking about? So this we spoke about at length once before. The bracha to Yisachar. Anybody remember in what context? Why is Yisachar a crouching donkey?
Never heard of a crouching donkey.
Donkeys are notorious for crouching. Do you have any expression, stubborn as a donkey?
Stubborn
as a donkey? When a donkey crouches and sits, it don't move. That's exactly the story of Bilam, where suddenly the donkey just sits down and doesn't move, so Bilam takes out a stick and gives it a clop. That's the whole image of a donkey, is that he's strong, but he's also stubborn. And once he crouches, he doesn't move. So what's Yaakov's bracha to Yisachar? Should be a crouching donkey.
You're stuck there, no one can move.
Stuck there, don't move. Why? Because he puts him ben ha-mishpatayim. What's ben ha-mishpatayim? Between the sheepfolds. What's ben ha-mishpatayim? Were we talking about this when we did Devarim Barak? Way back when?
Yisabafer?
She's the buffer between...
the territorial region assigned to Shevet Yisachar. What territory sounds like it would be a... between the sheepfolds. Sheepfolds are like...
So in a valley, if they're in
a valley.
Valley.
Correct. What valley?
Israel.
Correct. Emek Israel. Yisachar is placed in Emek Israel. Emek Israel is particular... this... remember we talked about the road system in Israel? Emek Israel is a particularly vulnerable area of land, constantly conquered and sought after because it controlled the highways and it controlled the commerce. So it's the most dangerous region. It's also the hardest to deal with, one of the hardest to deal with, because into the valley come the chariots of Sisera. You can't get into the mountains. So Yaakov's bracha to Yisachar is he should crouch down between the sheepfolds and stay there. It's a beautiful land. It's Vayar Menucha Kitov et Haaretz Kineima. It's a beautiful, fertile land. But to keep it, to use it, to cultivate it, to hold on to it, it's going to take a great deal of burden, a great deal of effort, a great deal of stubborn fighting in order to maintain that region. And which brings us to Shevet Dan. Dan yadin amo keechad shivtei Yisrael. Dan will judge his people or lead his people like one of the tribes of Israel. Yehi Dan nachash alei derech, shvifon alei orach, hanoshech ikvesus vayipol rochvo achor. Let Dan be like a serpent along the way, like a snake on the journey, who bites the heel of the horse and causes the rider to fall backwards. What are we talking about? This we discussed when we did Shimshon. Rashi quotes the story of Shimshon in its application to the Shofet of Shevet Dan.
Plishtim?
The Plishtim, specifically. Why the analogy to the snake along the way who bites the heel of the horse?
Did it have to do with the chariots?
So there's two applications. Rashi applies it to the story of Shimshon's bringing down the palace of Dagon on the Plishtim. In other words, the methodology by which Shimshon would operate in the world of the Plishtim was different from the methodology of the other tribes. Rather than an attack of an army direct, Shimshon is kind of this snake slithering in between and behind and biting the horse from within. But it also gives us the only methodological approach that a soldier can use against a chariot, which is
to attack the horse.
Take out the horse. Correct. The only way to take down a chariot is to take down the horse. So like a snake bites the horse gets frightened, the rider falls backwards. That's from a methodological point of view, a tactical point of view, that's the only way to deal with it. If you're telling Dan, in order for you to take your territorial region, you are going to have to deal with chariots, horses, and enemies that have to be dealt with from behind rather than in front, then essentially what you're saying to Shevet Dan is, where am I putting you?
A dangerous place,
specifically dangerous because of the horses, and horses and chariots function more directly in the coastal region than in the hills. So although Yaakov doesn't say specifically where he puts Shevet Dan, but he does tell him that he's going to be in an area which is going to need that kind of tactic in order to conquer. Then he adds three words which have confounded the Mefarshim. L'shu'atcha kiviti Hashem. I hope for and prayed to God for your salvation. Meaning? In two words?
God help him.
That's three, but I'll take it. Right? Good luck.
Right.
God help you.
It's not very encouraging.
No, but it's also realistic in the sense that he understood that he's given Dan a very difficult and a very challenging...
But he chose Dan.
Correct. All right. Asher and Naftali, I'm going to leave for now.
I mean, in general, none of this is easy.
None of correct. They each had a challenge. But you get a sense, if you read the brachos in this way, you get the sense that Yaakov is assigning territory to his children. More or less, there are other agendas in there, but Yaakov is assigning territory to his children. What happens to Shevet Dan? Why are they going up north? Given land by Yaakov.
They weren't successful.
So partially they weren't successful, but in part, coming back to the question we asked before, do they know where they're going? The first one to realize and to recognize that this assignment to Shevet Dan is too difficult for them is Moshe Rabbeinu. And the first one, therefore, to reassign Shevet Dan is Moshe. Where? No, I don't mean, where does Moshe reassign Shevet Dan?
Was that like the one of the spy stories with Ra?
Yaakov divides the land of Israel and gives it to the tribes in Parshat Vayechi. What does Moshe do? Moshe does the same thing, except Moshe does it in Parshat Vezota Bracha. Moshe in Vezota Bracha essentially goes through the same process that Yaakov went through before he died. If you go now to the end of Chumash, Perek Lamed Gimel, Vezota Bracha Asher Berach Moshe Isha Lekim Et Bnei Yisrael Lifnei Moto, Moshe's bracha to Bnei Yisrael before he died. Now there's many more agendas in Moshe's bracha. Moshe takes the Shvatim that Yaakov criticized and he, in a sense, re-praises them, reassigns bracha to them. So he starts with Pasuk Vav, Perek Lamed Gimel, Devarim Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Vav.
253.
Okay. First bracha to Reuven. What did Yaakov say to Reuven? Now, what did Yaakov say to Reuven? Now, what did Yaakov say to Reuven first?
This is Moshe.
Right, this is Moshe. What did Yaakov say to Reuven? We did it before.
You are my strength, but now I take it. You
were my
lost,
firstborn, and I punish you for your events. Right? So he rebukes him, correct? What does Moshe do? Yechid Uven va'al yamot v'hi mitav mispar. Bless Reuven, shouldn't die, should be great number. Meaning, as a kind of response to Yaakov's critique of Reuven, doesn't assign him the double portion that he lost, but he certainly does compensate to an extent for the bracha that he had. I'm going to skip a little bit. Go down to, for example, let's go down to Binyamin. Le Binyamin amar yedid Hashem. Binyamin is the beloved of God. Yishkon levetach alav. Chofef alav kol hayom uven ktefav shachen. Binyamin will dwell between his shoulders. Ben ktefav. I don't know if you remember back when we did Sefer Yehoshua. This is already before Sefer Shoftim, way back when. Our first year. The tribal territory of Shevet Binyamin is described as being in a valley between four mountain regions, each one called a Katef. Katef Yericho, Katef Yerushalayim, Katef Betel. And each one is called a Katef, a shoulder, because that's the area in which Binyamin is assigned.
Is that where Shiloh is?
No, Shiloh is in Ephraim. We'll come to Ephraim in a moment. Uli Yosef Amar Mevarechat Hashem Arzo. Yosef, which is Ephraim and Menashe, God should bless his land. It's fertile land. We make it Tvut Shamesh. We make it Geresh Yerachim. I'll skip a little bit. Go down to Zevulun. Also is told about Smach Zvulun B'Tzeitecha V'Yisachar Ba'olecha, the famous relationship between Yisachar and Zvulun that is defined in these words of the Zvulun in his business endeavors going out, Yisachar in the tent, which Chazal understand is a reference to the tent of Torah. Zvulun is on the coast, Zvulun is in the area of commerce, he's accessing the sea, so that doesn't change. God Baruch Marchiv God, expanding the territory of the area of God. God is on the east side of the Yarden. And then take a look at Pasuk of Bet. Uledan Amar. What did Hashem say to Dan? What did Moshe say to Dan? Dan Gur Aryeh. Dan is a
lion cub.
A lion cub. Yizanek mina bashan. Yizanek mina bashan. Three words. Three words which have stymied the Mefarshim because the word Yizanek has no comparable application in Tanakh. It's a word that appears in Tanakh once.
Here?
Words that appear here. Words that appear in Tanakh only once are mysterious because we have no cross-reference by which to interpret them. So if you look in the Mefarshim, which you have on the page in front of you, so as for example number 2, Yizanek ben Abishan says to Ibn Ezra, Ein lo chaver b'mikra. It has no friend. It has no other application. There's no other place where the root Yizanek appears. That makes it hard to translate. What does it mean, a lion cub that is zonek from the Bashan?
The English
says leaps. Wait. Don't look at the English. That's not fair. You see, the problem with the English is, no, we're going to get to the English in a second, but the problem with the English is the moment you look at a translation, you've assumed you've interpreted the word, but the word is open to interpretation. So now you've taken somebody along the line, some scholar, in looking at all of the exercise that we're about to look at, decided which one of the four or five different offered interpretations would make the most sense to him, since it has no other precedent, chose which one to use. But that doesn't help us explore the Mefarshim. So that's the challenge with translations. So for now, let's leave it as the in the Hebrew, Yizanek min Bashan. Says the Ibn Ezra, Dimau begvuato legur aryeh. Moshe compared Dan in his strength to a lion. Now, think about the most famous representative of Shevet Dan,
Shimshon.
And not hard to imagine the comparison of Shevet Dan to a lion. You also have in our story, in Perek Yudchet, what is Shevet Dan described as? Warriors. It's spies, warriors going out conquering. Not hard to imagine. Says the Ibn Ezra, Legur Aryeh Ka'ashe Yidaleg Mehar Bashan. He compares him to a lion cub as a lion would leap Yidaleg Mina Bashan. From the Bashan.
From
what's in Shir Hashirim?
Something about
The word appears everywhere in Tanakh. The leg is the leg al ayamim kafetz min hagvaot by called the din is about. Chizkuni similarly says Yizanek min habashan yetze v'yitrof teref. Yizanek min habashan, he will go forth from the Bashan, leap forth from the Bashan, and conquer his prey.
So that's different then.
It's not different at all. The word Yizanek is being translated by the Ibn Ezra as to leap. But remember the context of the Pasuk. The context is, Dan is a lion cub leaping from the Bashan. So that's exactly what he says. Yizanek min Bashan means yetze, v'yitof. You go, jump, leap, whatever it means, go out, and
we're going to pray.
What is a lion? Ibn Ezra doesn't say not to. He says a gurayye. What is a lion do when it leaps? Why does a lion leap?
An attack.
As attack. Is an attack. So why reference the Bashan? Since the Bashan is an area of lions and wild animals, it compares him to a lion.
That's the first time I'm thinking of the Bashan as a place for wild animals. I think of Bashan as very fertile.
That's because you're dealing with a modern vision of what the area looks like. And in the time frame of Tanakh, it's a jungle. We talked about the jungle that lives. We talked when we did Yoshua, if you remember, we talked about the jungle that grew up on both sides of the Yarden River, because it was a much larger river at the time, and it essentially supplied the water was sufficient enough to supply the entire area into what was known as Ya'ar Ephraim. Ya'ar Ephraim wasn't just a forest. We call Ya'ar in modern Hebrew a forest. But Ya'ar Ephraim in the time of Tanakh was a jungle. It was exactly the same Ya'ar Ephraim, which is the area on the map on both sides of the Yarden. If you go up along into Emek Beit Shan, it's exactly the same area that David HaMelech describes having chased his son Avshalom into the middle of the forest with all of his soldiers, and the beasts, the animals, destroyed the army of Avshalom. More people died at the hands of the beasts than died at the hands of the soldiers. Pasuk and Shmuel. Ya'ar Ephraim was a jungle. We'll talk about, what are they called, lions and tigers and bears? When the Torah describes the conquest of Israel, in Parshat Mishpatim, it says that God would bring us into the land of Israel slowly over the course of time. As we would conquer each area, we would settle it, rather than removing the Canaanites right away quickly and leaving large areas of the land uninhabited. It's not a good idea to leave large areas of the land uninhabited. Why? Pen yirbu elecha chayata sadeh. Lest the wild beasts of the forest, of the jungle,
take over.
What wild jungle is there in the land of Israel today? There is none. Right? But in the time of Tanakh, there was. Ya'ar Ephraim, which all the way up, because the Yarden was a large river. It was like the equivalent of the Amazon. Not quite that big, but certainly had the characteristic. So both the Ibn Ezra and Chizkuni understood the phrase Yizanek ben Bashan, as the Bashan is an area identified with lions, Dan compared to a lion leaping from the Bashan. Now, is the application of the phrase Bashan as a geographic region just a imagery,
a metaphorical
image for what Shevet Dan's character is? Or in line with all of the rest of the context of these brachot, does it also give me some indication of?
Location.
So now take a look at Rashi. Now take a look at Rashi. Yizanek min ha-Bashan, ketargumo. Rashi first tells me that we have to translate this in accordance with the translation in the Targum. The Targum translates Yizanek min ha-Bashan as drinking from the Bashan. Meaning what? Shehaya ha-Yarden yotze michelko. The Yarden River emanates from the beginning of the Bashan, from its portion. Says Rashi, the origins of the Jordan River would be found in his chelek. Now, if Shevet Dan is on the coast, in the area of Tel Dan, hard to imagine that the origins of the Yarden River, what are they called, the rivers that feed
the source of the river
would be in Tel Dan or in Gush Dan. Not going to happen. So Rashi tells me that's Mimarat Pamyas. What's Marat Pamyas? Marat Pamyas is known today as
Euphrates?
Nope. I bet you've been there. The Banyas. Have you been to the Banyas?
Yes.
And whenever you take a tour up to the Banyas, they tell you that the Banyas is one of the three rivers that's the source for the Jordan. Correct. And it's near Tel Dan. Now, that's not an accident. It's near Tel Dan because Tel Dan was named Tel Dan precisely because Dan went to settle in the area of Leshem, which Rashi tells me is the area of the Banyas. V'hu Leshem. Shehi b'chelko shel Dan. Leshem, says Rashi, is in the chelek of Dan. What do you mean chelek of Dan? Chelek of Dan is in the south. Oh, Shneemar vayikru leleshem Dan. Leshem is the banyas. Leshem is called Dan, although much later. Vizinuko v'kiluchom min haBashan. Its river flows from the Bashan. So he translates Zinuk as a kind of, if you can use an imagery of the flowing waters that come off the mountain of the Bashan, all feed into this area of the Banyas, and from there contribute to the emerging Jordan River. He has another interpretation of the word Zinuk, which is to split. The same way that the word zinuk can mean to split off, kach shivto shel Dan natlu chelak b'shnei mekamot. Similarly, Dan was given a chelak in two parts. Tchila natlu b'tzvonit maravit Ekron v'svivoteha. Initially, just north of Ekron, v'lo sipku lehem. It didn't work for them. So they went and they conquered the area of Pamyas. And that, I think I gave you this map last week, correct? Did I give you this map?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That is, you didn't see it. And that's precisely why.
You have it?
That's precisely why, if you look at the area in the north, you see Tel Dan, and you'll see. Near
Metula,
on the right hand side, you see the Banyas and Nachal Dan and Nachal Hermon, Nachal Shneir. Right, those are the three rivers that feed into the Jordan, and that's the area that is known as Tel Dan, otherwise previously known as
Leshem.
Now, Shimshon Ufal Hirsch has an interesting observation. He says there's proof that Moshe didn't just use the Bashan as a metaphor, but he actually assigned Dan to the Bashan, because in Sefer Breishit, when Yaakov assigns them to the coast, in Sefer Breishit, when Avram Avinu, before Yaakov, when Avram Avinu fights against the four kings, the battle of Kedar LaOmer. Remember Kedar LaOmer and his forces that came down from Eretz Shinar? When Avram Avinu chases back for the forces of Kedar LaOmer, it says that he chased them all the way down to Damascus. Damascus is?
Damascus.
So here's the pasuk. Vayishma Avraham ki nishba achiv. Yeah, Avram heard that his nephew had been taken. Vayarek et chanichav, he drew his sword, took his household with him, Yelidei Beito, Shmona Asa Ushlosh Meot, 318, Vayirdof Ad Dan. And he chased them up to Dan. Now, when you read that the first time, it doesn't register that Dan doesn't belong here. But when you see that Yaakov put to Dan on the coast, and that Dan is always on the coast, and suddenly you see in Sefer Breishit that we're reading that the Avraham Avinu chased him by Yadof Adan, what happened over here, says of Shimshon Ufal Hirsch, that Moshe's writing the Torah. In the time of Moshe, Dan is assigned the territory in the north, in the area of the Bashan. And so he calls it Dan, because Moshe knew that he had assigned that area, it will eventually be called Dan. Why? Because he gave it to them. In the same way you would call the area of Ephraim, Ephraim, in the same way you would call the area of Reuven, Reuven, he called the Golan Heights the area of Dan. Why? Because he gave it to them.
So how much was the time spent between Moshe realized that Dan was really going to get that area and when it occurred?
Depending on how you understand the story of the time frame here, if it's an early story, then we're talking about Moshe's grandson. Right? Conquest of Israel is Yeshua, so 7 years of conquest, 7 years of settlement. So sometime 14 years or so.
It's not that much.
Right. That's exactly, in other words, if you put into that context, Moshe says to them, here's your area on the coast, you're not going to be able to manage it. I'll give you a second territory up here in the Golan Heights called the Bashan, in the foot of Har Hermon. So after they tried on the coast, there was for the most part unsuccessful, a group broke off from Shevet Dan, said, wait a second, but we have a second assignment given to us. That second assignment is in the Golan, is in the Har Bashan, given to us by Moshe. So it's not like they come to this new, they go roaming around the country trying to figure out where they're going to go.
They had a target.
They had a location. They were going to go from Gush Dan on the coast up to the Golan Heights. To get there, they go into the mountains, which is safe Israel territory, and they start going directly north up to the area of the Golan Heights. Once they get there, then they'll start looking for a city that they can conquer. They find the city of Leshem and they conquer it. So they discover which city they conquer is up to them. But ultimately, the region in which they're assigned to live in, Yizanek Min HaBashan, starts from Moshe's recognition that Shevet Dan needs a second territorial region. So that's the mystery, I think, of Shevet Dan. They're migrating not just because they want to migrate, but also because they have a specific area that Moshe gave them. And it's interesting is that, you know, we spend so much time talking about Reuven, Gad, and Shimon having been given land east of the Yarden, or at least Reuven and Gad who requested land east of the Yarden. Moshe assigns whole sections of the territory east of the Yarden to Menashe, who never entered into that conversation at all, and to Dan. So that's the story, the mystery of Shevet Dan.
So you should have cereal also. As far as man.
Well, look at that. There's no question that the area of the Bashan, also known as Har Hermon, is part of the assignment. The most famous battle in that area belongs to David HaMelech. David HaMelech's most significant battle is on Har Bashan. It's equivalent of a world war in that time because it basically put all his forces and all his allies against all his enemies in an allied force, sort of a humongous battle. And that was, Shevet Dan.
So did all of Dan leave from the coast and go up north? Or there always was a presence at Dan?
You answer me that question.
There's always a presence.
How do you know?
Still there.
Well, they have it with the Plishtim anyway.
Because Shimshon is at the end of Sefer Shoftim.
Right, so I'm saying it's still...
If this story is early,
right.
Shimshon is certainly chronologically in place.
Right.
In fact, some of the Mefarshim suggest why is the story at the end of the Sefer if it's in fact happening early because of the connection to Shimshon. So, Shimshon connection, so we put the whole story of Shevet Dan in one place. I have a better explanation, I think. But be that as it may, Shimshon is certainly at the end of the story. So the struggle is there, and at the same time, there's a breakaway, if you will. Not an uncommon Jewish phenomenon, sitting in the Golan.
So they had two. There were people still in this section.
There's still people in this section. Still people in that section. That's where Rashi says that there's two parts to Shevet Dan, and why they're always double on the map. Mm-hmm. Shimshon is here. Mm-hmm. Shevet Dan is there. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how it works. All right, I'm going to suggest that for now we stop here. Because if I start the next piece, we are going to get caught up in a subject we're not going to finish. What I want to do next week is pull this all together with what is probably the most irksome question we haven't yet resolved. And that is the meaning of the phrase, "Vayimahem ein melech v'Yisrael ish yashar meinav yaseh," how all of this that we have so far addressed connects to the issue of Ein Melech Yisrael. That'll be our final piece in the story of Pesel Micha before we move on to Pilagish Begibah.